Well, good evening and a very warm welcome one and all to Dr. Rock's radio show here on peoplesinternetradio.com, where we are seeking solutions and finding many of them. Well, coming up in 20 minutes or so, we've got Simon Spaniard, one of the Doctor's favourite guests. He's been on the show two or three times before. We had a bit of a pre-show chat earlier on, and we got plenty to talk about. Very informed individual, of whom more later. That was Thin Lizzy, of course, and Don't Believe a Word. A sound piece of advice one can barely imagine at this stage in the game. And before that, Catatonia, I Am the Mob, because that apparently is what at the moment is in charge. And of course, we're all seeking a means of actually dealing with that. And hopefully we'll have good conversation along those lines tonight with my first guest since Mr. Microsoft forced us to upgrade our Skype and stuff. So the great Simon Spaniard. Are you there, Simon?
I am indeed. Hola. How you doing?
Very good. Thank you very much. That's all looking good. Looks like everything's working. Thanks very much for joining us again on the show. It's been, I think, a couple of years since we spoke last.
Oh dear. If it has, it flies very quickly. But, so, no, my pleasure. My pleasure.
And there's several things I want to cover tonight, as you know. One of the things I'd like to talk about first is, because I've seen several of your presentations, been to a couple of seminars. I've been religiously watching your YouTube things as they come out, because you're one of the, as I said earlier, one of the three YouTube channels that I've actually subscribed to. And I've been utterly fascinated, really, by the whole thing. And personally, I was really excited to see that you finally managed to settle down in front of a camera and an editing suite and produce not just one set of three CDs, but three sets of three CDs. Are you happy with the result?
Right, well, let me put it this way. I've been asked for the last few years now to produce DVDs, and, you know, I promised that I would do them, and I'd never actually quite gotten around to it for various reasons. And, you know, I finally decided that, okay, yep, let's get this thing done, because, you know, following the recent collapse at a seminar, you know, I just thought, I just can't do this anymore. I just cannot keep traveling around and doing these things. It's just too exhausting. So what started off as an intention to just produce, you know, one set with maybe four discs, turned into one set with six discs. Then it turned into three sets with 13 discs. So that's basically what we've got. So we've got three sets now with 13 discs in them. And I think I'm as happy as can be, bearing in mind my editing suite is Microsoft Movie Maker, and you know, the camera that I've got is just a, you know, a second hand cheap one. You know, I've done the best that I think I can do, and even that was tough enough. It was real tough going, I've got to be honest.
Must have taken a long time, didn't it?
Well, I ended up filming, I think if we average it out, I ended up filming the contents of each disc three times, and I just wasn't happy. And that's even a situation of going through filming it maybe once or twice, editing it, not being happy with it, and then redoing it. And throughout the whole process, I accidentally, like a complete idiot, recorded over a kind of final copy. I did it three times with three separate discs. Thought I'd done it a fourth time. Almost cried, and thankfully the computer rebooted with the film still intact. So I've had some, you know, some real kind of 40 tower setbacks with it, and I would say it's taken me about a week. If you add it all up, it takes about a week of maybe 16 hours a day to edit 1.5 hours.
Yeah, and that's after you've made it all. I guess it's pretty much the same, because I listen to my own podcasts largely so I can pick up verbal tics that as fast as I get rid of one, I seem to assume another. And that's just listening to your voice and sitting there shaking your head and thinking, oh, no, not again. It must be so much more difficult if you're actually having to watch yourself as well.
Well, I noticed some really bad habits of mine while I was editing this. So I ended up having to edit out certain bits repeatedly because I was just saying the same thing. And, you know, I noticed that I have a habit of saying certain words in order to set my mind ready to move on to the next section. And of course, you know, when you've heard yourself say the same word a number of times, it's just like, oh, this is ridiculous. You know, I sound crazy. So, I had to edit that out. But you know, by the end of that process, I was sick of the sight of my own face, to be honest, and the sound of my own voice.
Yeah. Yeah.
It really was.
And then I guess there's all manner of, costs associated as well, really, because, I mean, it's not a material free thing, is it?
No, I mean, these discs, the sets, you know, I'm actually asking for funds or for C-Ash, you know, in exchange. And, you know, the line of thinking, there were a few lines of thinking behind all of this. I mean, on the first hand, and we're going to have many hands, on the first hand, you know, I was asked to do these things. So, you know, I've done them. The second thing was, what I wanted to do, I wanted to try and, you know, I wanted to try and produce something that was, you know, a little bit different from what you usually get when you buy, you know, some kind of freeman philosophy or, you know, kind of amateur production, which is like, you know, maybe just a CD or a DVD in a blank case or a blank wallet with some cardboard. And if you're lucky, a handwritten label on it. So, and there's nothing wrong with that. You know, there's nothing wrong with that at all. However, I wanted to try and produce something which, you know, as far as I was concerned, was my best effort to try and get into the mainstream. I wanted to try and make it attractive to people that are still in the mindset where they want it to look good. Right. Yeah. So I've tried to produce something that looks quite smart. And I think it looks, you know, for my efforts, let's put it that way, as me that's, you know, kind of made the effort, I think it looks all right. I think it looks pretty smart. And in terms of the content, what I've tried to do is I've tried to approach it from the point of view of, you know, it's all well and good having lots of technical stuff on there and so on and so forth. But I try to approach the making of the videos on the YouTube channel, or in terms of the way that I explain stuff, I try to explain it as if I'm talking to my mate down the pub. And I'll just use the kind of common speak that we'll use, you know, and sometimes it's the wrong terminology if you're talking from a technical point of view, but it's the lingo that's used among most people.
Well, one of the things we're trying to do is the thing we obviously need to do at this stage, if we're going to go from having this information in just one head to several to many heads, then it has to be put across in the vernacular.
Absolutely. You've got to, you know, it's all well and good, you know, having all the technical stuff there and so on and so forth. But a lot of people, if it's not presented in a way that is going to grab the attention of, let's say, the masses, well, then they're not going to look at it. So, you know, the proof of that is as follows. All the information that you, I, other people, you know, learn from is widely available, right? It's widely available on the internet. But no one's looking, right? It's available in libraries. It's available here, there, and everywhere. But it's deemed to be or perceived to be a boring subject matter. It's perceived to be a subject matter, especially when talking about banking or money, that people think they know how it all works. They believe they know how it all works. You know, and it's not exciting. It's not exciting. It's not fun. It seems boring. And so what we have to try and do is, you know, present that information or bring that information to people in a way that they can relate to, in a way that they can kind of understand and that they can kind of grasp. So, you know, if you want the technicalities, read the technical book. But if you want to kind of understand the concepts and get your brain working to try and, you know, look at things in a different way, well, then that's pretty much what I try and do. And of course, you know, by focusing on or trying to produce something which is going to be attractive to the mainstream, you know, of course I'm trying to raise loads of funds. I would love this to be a blockbuster hit, you know, like Gladiator or something like that, because, you know, what I could do with those funds, you know, what I could do. I've got projects galore waiting, you know, that I've got in my mind that I want to roll out. And of course, like so many projects, you know, in the kind of, let's say, the conscious community, as it were, you know, a lot of these things fall down, as we were talking about earlier before the show, because, of course, there's no funding. And, you know, I mentioned earlier that, you know, I've noted a kind of, you know, from some quarters, there's a kind of undertone that, you know, you wake up to all of this stuff And one of the first responses that a lot of people have had that I've spoken to and myself was, I'm never working for a corporation again. Now, I'm not saying I'm going to go out and work for a corporation, because as far as I'm concerned, I never want to work for a corporation again. But there also seems to be an undertone whereupon people said, well, you can't handle that CASH. And I say CASH, I mean cash, Bank of England notes. Well, fair enough. I understand why people might not want to handle it. But in terms of being able to actually do stuff, you're limiting. You're actually setting a limit on yourself, right? You're actually kind of hobnailing yourself by refusing to engage in certain things which can generate you funds to go and do some good things with. And so I don't see the issue with utilizing, you know, it's the poetic justice. You take various techniques that are being utilized in that system against the people, right, for example, or to ultimately punish people, right, and further the aims of certain parties. And you use that exact same technique to turn it round, right? So, for example, you know, I mean, not that I'm an expert, but, you know, I want to learn how to actually market this stuff to some of the mainstream people, right? Because why not? At the end of the day, am I doing someone a favor by, for example, rather than them going out and buying half a new pair of trainers or a third of a new pair of trainers for 40 quid, am I doing them a favor by attracting them to something which looks good, sounds good, no matter what I say to get them to look at the DVD, right? No matter how it's presented, as long as they look at it, well, that's the kind of main aim of the game. And so within those DVDs, I've tried to present them in such a way so that by the end of the DVD, you get it. In other words, that you only have to watch it once.
Well, the other thing about that is that the kind of things you're talking about in the DVDs, if you put them into practice, then you're going to make the money back on the DVDs many times over, and there ain't many DVDs you can say that about.
No, well, absolutely. I mean, the way I look at it is this, you know, there's three DVDs. So you've got the, you know, how to hold corporations to account for their actions, which is effectively, you know, how to gain compensation. I mean, and it was reworded because we didn't want to make it sound like compensation culture, right? So it was just titled in that way, but it's effectively the same thing. And that, you know, as far as I'm concerned, within your first 10, in inverted commas, complaints or issues, you know, you should get them funds back that you've utilized to obtain the DVD. But secondly, you've then hopefully picked up a few skills which are going to help you in future. With regards to the loans and credit cards one, that's the truth about money, banking, loans and credit cards. That's going to show you how I have wiped off credit and cleared the credit file, right? But it's going to explain how money works and so on and so forth. Now, I have tested this one, right? This has been tested. I had guinea pigs, or victims, as they might well be called, but I had guinea pigs, and, you know, I've actively asked for feedback from people that have already obtained them. And thankfully, I've had some positive feedback from one of the guys, one of the bunnies out there. He said that he's been trying to explain it to his wife and his mother-in-law, I think it was, for some period of time, 9 months or so. Sat them down in front of the DVD. Obviously, I've got music on there. I try to have a bit of a laugh. You know, try and keep it all kind of, you know, light-humoured and so on and so forth. And by the end of it, she'd got it. She understood. So that's not necessarily saying that she's ready to go out and start, you know, performing some Jedi moves or anything, but she gets it. Now the thing
well,
is...
Well, at least she understands what it is that the male of the partnership is up to, because it quite often seems to me there is a bit of a difference opinion frequently there.
Yeah, I can understand that, and you know, I understand that situation totally. You know, and I'm guessing that especially if there's little ones involved, or you've got the home, you know, that's the nesting instinct coming in and the protective instinct. But you know, the main thing is, it's like anything. You can only deal with a problem once you accept there's a problem. And so in order for people, you know, if we can get people to actually understand that there is a problem and that they are being screwed, for want of a better word, albeit the fact they may not be able to feel it and they may not be able to see it. Well, I'm sure they feel it, but they don't see it. And they don't understand how they're getting screwed. But I think most people know they're getting screwed. So the point is, just by merely being able to show them that, well, that's half the battle in some respects, because now you've got the intention and the will and everything like that shifting, right? The energy is going to shift. The vibe is going to shift. The way in which people look, consciously look at everything is going to shift. And so, you know, there were a number of kind of facets to the production of the DVDs. You know, and yes, unashamedly, if I can get those DVDs, I say unashamedly, there's no shame in it at all. If those DVDs were as successful as I want them to be, right? Well, you know, I call this the positive economy.
That'd be great. I'll come up and have some chips and beer off you.
Oh, you'd be welcome. It's not necessarily for me. The point is, you know, we all have to handle some form of currency to eat. I'm not a millionaire. I don't have a plot of land. So how do I eat? So we've all got to eat. We've all got to be able to sustain ourselves. And a lot of people out there want to be able to focus as their, in inverted commas, not occupation or job, it's more of a vocation. They want to have a vocation where they're doing something positive. But a lot of people seem to have this immediate, and I understand it, the immediate rejection of, right, okay, no, I don't want to handle that cash. I don't want anything to do with that system. Well, that's fair play. But unless you interact with it in some respects, you're going to hold yourselves back. And we all have to handle it to some extent. What we need to change is how we get it. And what we do once we've got it, right? And if we change that, is that still not positive? Of course it's positive. And it can be powerful. And the thing is, what it means is that then people are actually supporting themselves and enabling themselves to actually do something positive, potentially put out there a service or change what, or what maybe what they're already doing, but actually be able to then generate people out, well, let's put it this way. In the business world, they'd call it profit, excess of income over expenditure, right? Where, whatever you want to call it, it's the same difference. But if it leaves you with an excess of funds that you can then put into something or, you know, or increase what it is that you're doing or expand what you're doing from a positive perspective, I can't see how that's bad.
No, and I think that, you know, this time we have been spending with inadequate supplies of gaming tokens is perhaps teaching us the things we need to know so that when that change occurs, we'll be able to make that resource really useful.
Well, I think so. I mean, you know, let's put it this way. I'm aware of a number of, entrepreneurs out there, shall we say. So people that had businesses, they wake up. Right. And some of these people have been awake for a long period of time. And so their business or their job, has been along the kind of, getting information out there line, for some period of time. But there are business people out there or that have been in business, just like all of us. We were all doing jobs, you know, before we all woke up to whatever's going on and however we woke up. And so what do? You can't just, you know, some people physically don't want to do what it is that they're doing. They want to change or they want to divert their energy into something more positive. But a lot of these people have actually taken it upon themselves, to actually then, rather than, you know, chase the buck in order to gather stuff onto them, they're chasing the buck in order to invest it in doing something positive and actually, you know, spreading the conscious awareness or providing a service, which is actually helping people out. And it just self-propagates so that they're able to then bring people on that are in this whole awakening and bring them on into something which is positive. So you're actually kind of, you know, you're gathering, you're creating a snowball effect just in that one, what would have been termed organization or company or whatever. But it's being used to propagate something positive. And I don't think we should turn away from that. I think we need all the help we can get. And I think we need to utilize all the tools and resources we can use in order to get this point across to people.
Yeah, indeed. And of course we would also be in a position to help other people who were previously as we were. You know, it only takes one of us to start actually getting what you're describing together to then look to his buddy who he's been working with for the last 4 or 5 years who's got similar ideas and commitment and say, hey, look, you know, here's a couple of hundred, whatever. Why don't you do that thing you were talking about?
Absolutely. You know, absolutely. Because, you know, it's, I want to try and give some examples, but I don't want to give games away. you know, all I can say is, well, let's put it this way. One of my plans, right? So one of the things I would love to do, I get inundated with emails, and I do thank everyone out there for sending emails over. You know, it's really nice to get, I mean, there's a lot of people that want to join the newsletter anyway, and there tend to be nice comments. You know, I would say 99.9999% of the time, you know, the feedback is really fantastic. It's great that people like what's being done. I do the best I can. You know, I'm not Trevor McDonald, and you know, I'm not exactly Steven Spielberg, but I try to make the videos entertaining. I try to have a laugh. I try to entertain myself as well. And you know, if it's getting some info out there, if it's getting some useful tips out there, and if it's keeping people entertained and giving them a bit of a laugh and raising the spirits, well then fantastic. That's what it's supposed to do. And also, you know, lightening, making it a lighter burden, you know, the potential situation that we're up against or that we're in is, you know, looking at it from the funny side, because ultimately, you know, if we're, if consciousness or conscious energy never dies, well, then ultimately, you know, dying is, as I kind of define it, you use a dying metal work to create a thread on a screw. So dying is going up or down the spiral, right? So, so at the end of the day, you know, let's try and get it all into perspective. You're never going to achieve anything if you're just fearful of it. So you've got to approach it and handle it in a way that's easy to cope with. And I find that humor is one of the easiest ways of dealing with it.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
You know, so I just try to make the videos entertaining. I'm glad that people, you know, like that kind of stuff, but I'll get back on track anyway. So people send a lot of emails come over. Really thankful for it. But of course, I can't answer all the questions that come over.
Oh, you're getting questions that you've answered again and again and again.
Absolutely. And, you know, that does become annoying, especially when I kind of put, you know, when I'm doing all this kind of stuff, believe it or not, I kind of put my manager hat on. I kind of think that I'm, you know, I'm out there trying to have to, you know, well, not have to, but there to motivate. Right. I'm there to motivate. I'm there to, like, hopefully not lead from the front in some respects, but not in all respects, but try to show people that, look, come on. You know, I'm up for this. Are you up for this? Well, if we're going to be up for it, well, let's do something. You know, let's do something positive. Let's make something happen, whatever. But it's trying to show people just don't be afraid, because, you know, that fear is what's holding you back. But I've noticed that, you know, obviously I get loads of emails and I can't answer everything. In fact, I can't answer much at all because I'm one guy. Now, I then think to myself, well, okay, you've got all these people. A lot of these questions may well be very basic questions, right? Maybe if I had a team of people, I could actually have someone handling that. Maybe I could have two or three people. Maybe I could actually have a 24/7 call line, you know, telephone number, which people can call up for help. Maybe we could actually provide a kind of central nucleus where people that are dealing with financial issues, law issues, simple problems, you know, whatever it may well be, can actually contact and get in contact for just basic advice or referral to someone that they know is trusted to help them.
Yeah.
You know, for example, if I said today, oh, by the way, we've joined up with a massive firm of barristers. We've had a good chat with them. They're on our side and they're prepared to do everything that they possibly can in order to help people out from their perspective, you know, within that system. I've got no doubt there'd be a whole load of people out there that would be happy to use them.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. So if you could find such a bunch of barristers, of course.
If you could find, and yeah, there are some, oh, trust me, there are yeah, out, there yeah, are some out there, right?
I should imagine a growing number as time goes by.
Yeah. Oh, there are lots out there, and there are lots out there that will help, but won't put their name forward to do it.
Not willing to take liability. We've heard that before.
Yeah. No, well, no, no. What I mean by that is they cannot, because of what's maybe being argued, they can't be seen to be releasing the info. So they tell you and you go do it.
Okay. Which is a fair argument anyway, because learning how to do it yourself is ultimately the only way.
Absolutely. So it's teaching you, but it's also giving you some top tips and some top approaches, but it's not dropping, they're not dropping themselves in it, which is okay, fair play, because they might get kicked out of that which we need them in. So, it's all give and take. You know, we've got to be flexible with this. And, you know, all I would say is I think we've got to make maximum use of what we've got available to us, right? And what we've got available to us is, as a conscious community, for example, right? What we've got, you've got a great load of dedication out there. You got a great load of will and spirit, right? Fantastic. Now we need to translate that into drive. Now, I say drive, and I don't mean that to sound demeaning, because I know a lot of people out there are highly driven. They've been doing what they're doing for years. They've done it with little, if any, money or currency, right? They've put themselves through complete hardship in order to live that dream or to abide by their ethics and and their standards in terms of how they want to do things and why they want to do things and so on and so forth. However, they may find themselves not getting very far, right? And so, you know, that's why I just think that if you're able to translate that into something which enables you to take it that step further, or if there are entrepreneurial types out there who can tweak what they're doing at the moment, if maybe they've got their own business, maybe they want to tweak it, maybe they want to change what they're doing business in, well then, you know, maybe give some thought as to how the existing systems, you know, with the law and the banking and stuff like that, can be tweaked in such a way as to make it positive as opposed to negative, because there are a hell of a lot of people out there that when they wake up, they're going to have no ability to do stuff for themselves and to chop and change things. They need someone to provide that service to them, right? Because in their mindset, they're used to paying for it.
Yeah. Yeah, there's some people apparently that still buy licensed software even when it's free. Honestly, I'd rather give you 350 quid.
Well, let's put it this way, right? Okay, let me put it this way. Everyone needs help. You know, for example, I'm useless at car mechanics. I'm useless at doing anything like, I mean, I'm sure I could do it if I really put my mind to it, but I ain't got the time. So, you know, if I need something done with the car, if I need something done with, you know, like plumbing or whatever it is at home, blah, 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 then I need to get someone out to do it. Now, okay, I've actually utilized, for example, in the past, a company to come out and do it, you know, maybe the first time. But what I quickly did was then speak to the member of staff who was working for the company and set up a deal whereupon I pay them cash in hand cheaper than what I would get it through the company, because I'm giving it to the guy or the girl direct.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I don't mind doing that. I'm happy to pay them for their expertise, no problem. Right?
Yeah.
But I don't like paying the company, so do the deal with the member of staff and give it to them on the sly.
Yeah.
They're going to be happy to do it, you know what I mean? So the thing is, there are loads of little tweaks that people can make to actually keep the currency flowing among the people, all right, because that's where it needs to keep flowing. It needs to flow among people. We shouldn't be banking it. That's whether it's with a corporation or a bank. We should, you know, they're all banks, basically. We shouldn't be banking it. We need to keep it flowing because we, the people, have to pay for the use of that particular note.
Yeah.
So the more hands it can pass through, the more potential debts among the people it can settle, and it's just still the same note.
Because, it will just go on settling the debts of the people until somebody puts it into a bank.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, and what little currency I do tend to get in my hand tends to go straight out again, right, to somebody else's hand. And that's good because it's all flowing. It's sharing the love.
It's current. It's what it's supposed to be.
Absolutely. Now, the problem is not money. Money's not the problem. The problem is we are not handling money. That's the problem, right? That's CASH. Although we use that to, you know, to show that, you know, let's put it this way. I know I can go down to WH Smith's and obtain something if I really want to using some CASH, right? Everyone's going to recognize it. So the point being, it's not preferable where it's being issued from. It's not preferable what it stands for, but it achieves a job, right? It achieves an ends. And, you know, all I'm kind of saying is, look, at the end of the day, if we can do something more positive with it, then let's do something positive with it. Let's just change how we get it and what we do with it.
Yeah.
And that's going to have a positive effect. Let's not cut our own legs off before we've started running.
This is why, of course, the Stasi are being encouraged to report people who are paying for everything in cash.
Oh, are they really?
Yeah. Bless them. I wish them the best of luck with that.
Oh dear. Right. Oh, I didn't know that. Oh dearie me. But you know, look, ultimately I tend to you know, I would say it's probably impossible to make a switch overnight to do everything by favors, but I tend, at the moment, my existence is split in, you know, kind of three energy exchanges. I do stuff as favors, you know, I do stuff for donations, and I do stuff in exchange for other stuff.
Yeah, we do exactly the same thing. There's a kind of social capital built up by always being willing to go in and do the stuff, and other things come back. The money side of it is only a very small part, really. But like you say, it is a necessary part.
It's a necessary part. You know, you want to go and order something from a shop. What are you going to do? Offer to sweep up, they're going to say, bugger off, they want the money. So, or the cash, so, you know.
It's amazing how many people do want a bit of gardening done.
Well, you know, as I say, that has its place. Of course that has its place. But it depends what project you're trying to get off the ground. And, you know, for the project that I want to get off the ground, because I would love to have help centres. I know there are one or two projects on, off and up and running at the moment. Which would be fantastic if they come off, right? I'm not going to go too deeply into them, but I would like to have help centres around the country. I would love to have that. And I think I've got a methodology by which it can be achieved, but I need to get it up and running and test it first and then blueprint it and pass it out to people that I think can actually, you know, operate it.
Well, you have got quite a substantial network of well-informed, well-competent people on these sort of gameplays, haven't you?
Well, the thing is, it's just let's put it this way. When you're talking about the business community, right, you've got loads of nice people, and they all care, and I know they care. I know they care. Because a lot of these people get up every day, they travel to go and do a job they hate, but they do it because they love their family and they want to feed their family and give them the best they can. Right?
Yeah.
So I know that people care. I also know that people get blinded by, you know, they get stuck in that, you know, they get kind of brainwashed or possessed the moment they walk through that entrance at work. And, you know, they then get stuck into the mill following the orders and so on and so forth, because that's what they got to do in order to just get that paycheck. There are a lot of people out there that would actually be over the moon to be just either tweaking what it is that they do, or if we present to them something different, or how they tweak what they're already doing, or give them a new product or a new service to offer, which is more positive. These people, because their mindset is to make profit, they're going to automatically be thinking perhaps from that angle, right? If you're talking to business people. But you can quite easily, because you're way dangling a carrot of, well, you're going to bring in XYZ, you can potentially, as long as these people understand what it is you're trying to get them to do and why, well, now you've potentially got a business on side, right? And maybe I haven't explained this very well, but let's put it this way. If you've got a business of maybe 10 people that work there, you get an economy of scale because they get compartmentalized, right? They're doing whatever functions that they're doing. So whatever it is that you're trying to propagate out there, you get a business on the side, and you remember you're providing this service to people that are not conscious per se. This is the mainstream, right?
Yeah.
People that need stuff done for them, they're happy to consume, they're happy to pay. Right, I'd rather have them consuming something which is either going to educate them or do them a favor or do them something good or make them raise an eyebrow and think, hold on, what's that all about? What's this all about? You know, so start taking an interest. I'd rather have them buying that than putting the money in some corporation for the next iPhone or for the next computer game or for the next pair of sneakers or for the next branded t-shirt or for the next perfume or should I say, you know, for the next annual subscription to Hello magazine or something like that.
Which is simply another way of taking the cash, extracting it and putting it into a hedge fund that's based in, I don't know, tax, you know, a tax avoidance network of some sort.
Wherever. Yeah, absolutely. The point is, with all the information that's out there, whether it be in health or whatever, you know, it's so interesting, the sacred geometry, the study into that, you know, the law, the banking, the free man thing. The point is, if we package that and present that in such a way as to make it attractive to mainstream, that can create funding beyond your wildest dreams for the projects that you want to get up and running. And could potentially actually provide, you know, vocations for people who want to be taking part in that, but are not able to take part in that because they're not in the situation where they're self-sufficient or that they can give up that income to look after their families.
Yeah, we have to somehow be able to buy people's time, don't we?
You've got to be able to buy people's time. You know, it's not that people don't want to do stuff. It's just that people are, they're chained. They're stuck. So it's like, okay, fine. You know, you've got those chains. Let's now, you know, look at a way of operating whereupon we can take care of that issue, but with what we're doing together as some kind of, whether you call it an organization, whether you call it a charity, whatever it is you want to call it, right? Club, movement, whatever. By banding together and working together, that becomes a powerful unit.
Yeah. Yeah, and gives opportunities for not just economies of scale, but whatever the equivalent is, sort of ideas of scale.
Absolutely. Well, output becomes more than input, yeah?
Yeah.
It's like nuclear fission.
Yeah. I mean, without doubt, people are ready. I mean, I've noticed with you that it seems to be particularly prevalent amongst the truth movement to me that people don't want to hand over the money. You know, you can get 40, 50, 60, 100 people in a room. And for some reason, they are happier to buy a Mac or a pair of trainers or whatever it is than they are to hand over a fiver, say, for information that they're clearly keen to have. It's a rather strange thing.
Well, I mean, I must confess, you know, over at the seminars and stuff, you know, I tend to operate the seminars on the basis that, you know, those that can donate, donate, those that can't, don't, and, you know, anywhere in between, I'm happy to, you know, let you in and whatever. It's not a problem. You know, I just like to try and cover. I have to average out, or I had to average out, you know, expenditures are getting there. I mean, when I was doing two or three seminars a month, it was costing £600 a month just to keep the car on the road.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
Where does that come from? You know, then of course I've got to rent the venue. Then of course I've got to eat. Then of course I've got to maybe stay over. Then of course I'm going to be knackered for 3 days because it used to knacker me for 3 days after a weekend. So, you know, the point is, you know, you've got to eat and stuff. And as I say, I'm quite flexible with this because like, you know, I understand that everyone's circumstances are different. But I've got to balance it.
Yeah.
But the situation is that, you know, when we're presenting this to people in mainstream, I mean, this is the funny thing, right? There are a whole host of people. In fact, let me ask you, Dr. Rock, have you ever bought one of those Sunday newspapers where you get given the free CDs?
No. I have occasionally bought the free CDs from a charity shop.
You're the first person I've heard to that. Well, my example, you've maybe ruined my example now. But my example was going to be as follows, in as much as, you know, I know myself that, you know, I used to, if I ever bought the Sunday, or when I used to buy the newspapers, right, you know, you'd get really what is basically a brick of paperwork, right, magazines and other crap. And you'd often get these free CDs, and I'd put them to the side thinking, well, I'll record the one that I recognize off of there. I'll burn that one, and then the rest, I'll probably just bin it. And the inevitable happens where after, you know, 3 years or so, I've got a backlog of loads of these CDs that I've never listened to, and I bin them.
Yeah, yeah.
Right.
What you need is a radio show, mate. You'd have the tracks away like a flash then.
Well, you see, the thing is, let's put it this way, right? I know there's a whole load of people out there that do exactly the same. In fact, I know there's a whole load of people out there that don't even save them with the intention of recording them. They just bin them.
That's why there's so many of them in the charity shop.
Absolutely. Now, do you know why that is?
Go on then.
Because they were free.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah, yeah. That's a really good point. I mean, when I used to do big landscaping jobs and stuff, I worked with another guy in Oxfordshire and we were doing really styly things, you know, 30,000-40,000 pound contracts and stuff. And, we noticed pretty quickly that trying to undercut the competition where it was at was doing absolutely accurate quantity estimation, labor estimation, all that kind of stuff. And then doubling or trebling your price depending on what their house looked like.
Yeah, sure. I mean, like, you know, the thing is, absolutely. The thing is,
because they wouldn't buy it, because the point being, because they wouldn't buy it otherwise.
Well, yeah, I mean, you know, in some instances like that, people need the quality of the work.
Well, yeah, or a bit like buying licensed software when you can have it for free. There's certain sorts of people who, even though you'd build them the same garden for 20 grand as you would for 40 grand, they wouldn't be so happy with it as if they'd given you 40 grand. I know it's bizarre, but
it's crazy, and it's proven in marketing. Okay, from marketing stats and stuff like this, unless, you know, with some people, and a lot of people out there have been conditioned into this as well, because of course that's how the big corporations, you know, are able to then, you know, charge through the nose for branded items and this, that and the other, and people think they're getting better quality per se when they might not be. Now the thing is, there are a whole host of people out there that given the option of looking at that information or given the option of having the free CD, they won't look at it. Why? Well, because there's no value. There's no value to looking at it. Well, yeah. How do they come to that conclusion? Well, because there was no price on it. You were giving it away. And I hasten to add, the proof of this is all the information we talk about is on the internet, but no one's looking.
Yeah.
Now they're not looking because of a number of reasons. One, it's free, right? And it is free. It's all over the internet, right? but these people that see that it's free don't see a value in it.
Interesting.
They don't see a value in it. It could be that they've not been affected by it, so they don't need to see a value in it. But it could also be that if it's not a case that the value issue, it's a case of it's being presented incorrectly, or it's not being presented in a way or via a medium or in a fashion that they find appealing. Mm. So what we have to do, this presents an opportunity. This is an opportunity, right? Because, you know, anything, if there are, from a constructive criticism point of view, anything that's not being done at the moment, presents itself as an opportunity. And if the word is out, if we think about how the word's gotten out now, and it's pretty much, you know, all over the show, I would have thought, it's quite, you know, it's out there, certainly on the law and banking side, it's out there. Now, the point is, after such a period of time, you know, I've been in this for 6 years or 7 years, and I've seen how it's increased, but that's 7 years. In order to speed that up, you know, this is with the information being free or presented in the way it's being presented, which is, you know, very factual. You know, I'm not saying always boring. There are some entertaining speakers out there, but they're few and far between. And when I say few and far between, you know, few and far between for my low intellect to understand, you know, to actually get excited about. It's not that the information is duff. It's just that, you know, 4 hours of someone speaking can be a bit, you know, boring or tiring, you know, after a while. You know, you need to have it. You need it spruced up. You know, you need a bit of liveliness, a bit of entertaining, so on and so forth. And maybe I'm one of those people that likes to see that kind of thing. And so this is the way we've got to try and get it across. And it presents an opportunity because it means that the people out there that are great at writing books, for example, great at writing stories, are very creative, poetry, whatever, drawing, so on and so forth. You now have an opportunity to turn your skill into a product which actually can create sustenance for you, perhaps raise funds so that you can do a project and become attractive to those parties that are attracted to something that has a value put on it because they're being told this is valuable. Obtain me, buy me, this is valuable. But it's then presented in a way that they like, whether it be for little uns, you know, whether you split up the marketplace, you know, women, affluent gents, this kind of gent, you know, youngsters, whatever. There's a whole different, we've got to start using marketing techniques to get the information before the eyes, all the eyes.
Yeah. And of course, what you were saying earlier about, you know, using terms that might not be technically correct and all that kind of stuff to attract attention. Nearly all of this subject matter revolves around a precise understanding of words and how they're being used. So you're really quickly going to get drawn into the kind of precision that you need.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, for example, you know, in the, you know, I'll often refer to money, but we know it's not money, but people call it money. So why would I go around calling it a debt instrument to someone that I want to understand? I want them to understand what I'm talking about.
It turns them off straight away, doesn't it? Money's not credit, money's debt.
Absolutely. I mean, it gets them confused for a start because that's just immediately back to front. So, you know, as if I wanted to go and, you know, if I'm chatting to a brain surgeon and he starts talking to me in medical terminology, I'm going to get lost immediately because I haven't got a Scooby-Doo what he's talking about. So the point is we need to break this down. We need to speak in language and in a fashion and in a way that people can get.
Yeah.
So I try to make, you know, the videos on YouTube. I try to make it fun. I try to make it interesting and I try to speak in lingo that people will understand.
It's funny that there was an interesting kind of, experiment done. Somebody turned out some Shakespeare plays using one of the English sort of dialects or accents. I can't remember whether it was you know, West Midlands or Liverpool or whatever, maybe, I don't know, maybe they got a selection of them. And what they did was they then took these plays on tour in the north of England, where apparently very few people, relatively speaking, have got any interest in the subject matter. And the first thing they noticed was that by people delivering it that way, it took a third off the length of the play. So they were a lot quicker. They moved a lot faster than when we were using, received pronunciation or whatever it's called. But the other thing was they were really popular, and they were popular. Say they were using the West Midlands accent. They were much more popular in places like Liverpool and Newcastle and places like that, because they were just more accessible.
Mm. You've got to do it. We can't, there's absolutely no point with us, you know, saying, well, okay, you know, if you're going to explain something, it's got to be technical, or we've got to produce it in this way, or it's got to be on there, and so on, this, that, and the other. You're limiting the people that are going to be attracted to it.
Mm.
All right. And let's face it, we are in the market of teaching people and bringing their attention to the problems. That's our marketplace. That is what we're here. That's what we're selling.
Yeah.
Right? We're not selling that dream that they've all bought into. We're selling a different dream, right? And it's a different dream which is better for everyone, and it's a different dream which is actually reality. and having the full benefit of you know, our divinity and our power and our, you know, our rightful inheritance on this planet, and sharing it and helping each other out, as opposed to competing with each other, which is just self-defeatist. It's an absolute joke. It's ridiculous.
Yeah, I think people are, the thing is that as well as coming up with the sort of presentation and the looks of the thing and giving it some sort of value and approaching it in a way that people are ready to accept and listen to, rather than just invoke a slide response and just turn away from you and buy another pint or whatever. By and large, I see people now queuing up at the edge of the rabbit hole, either because of encounters with vaccinations, or encounters with poor food, or encounters with what, for want of a better word, we'll call the apparent authorities. Perhaps the best example I've come across is the TV license fee. I remember hearing that there was a Facebook page which reckoned that it had managed to get something like 500,000 people successfully to challenge that one way or the other. And the result of that was much bigger than the 500,000 people, because of course they then start looking at other things. Like I was saying earlier before you came on, because vaccinations are evidently an entirely harmful and criminal, damaging endeavor. And everybody, one way or nearly everybody, one way or the other, through their children, their offspring, are being exposed to it. Once they get exposed to the information that tells them what vaccination is and gives them the validation for it, then they will have to, almost by definition, start looking at the system that is providing the vaccinations and start asking other questions about what that system is doing. A bit like people challenging the TV license then must look at the word license, or a lot of them, and think, well, hang on a moment, what about this fishing license? What about this gaming license? Is it as significant as the Babylon Broadcasting's license? So it seems to me that loads of people are now ready for the kind of information that we're trying to put across, and so all the arguments you made for it are, I think, pertinent to the moment as well as generally valid. And one of the CD set that most immediately attracted me out of the ones that you're selling was the one that says welcome to the rabbit hole. Once people are queued up, it surely seems like a good idea to introduce them to the concept that there's a hole in front of them and they might as well come on down because it's not safe up there. How did you approach that?
Right. Okay. Well, it was difficult because, of course, it's where do you draw the line? Where do you stop? I mean, that was originally going to be two DVDs. It's now six, you know,
that's why. Yeah, that's why you ended up with 13 DVDs.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, I've still merely scratched the surface.
Yeah.
And that's because, you know, when I was traveling around doing the seminars, you know, even what I classified as being a kind of beginner's seminar, it's really difficult to remember how the smallest anomaly can blow someone's brain for a couple of weeks.
Yeah.
And it's just like one anomaly, right? And of course, I used to, you know, drag people in, and I felt that I had to try and, you know, part of me wanted to impart as much info or little tips as possible. And I used to have a lot coming up to me at the end saying, a lot of that's just gone right over my head, or you've just blown my brains out with what you've just been coming out with, and so on and so forth. But, and so, okay, yeah, you know, it maybe opens up, but I can see the benefit of doing that to some extent, but I just thought, well, okay, on this, I want to try and approach it from the point of view of, I want to really focus on some of just the concepts, right? And the whole idea of the DVD or that particular set is to actually show people that there are things to be questioned. So I haven't tried to come out with, oh, there's all this going on and there's this and there's that. I've kind of left it with questions in some respects, but the questions have kind of answered themselves, if you know what I mean. All the viewer has to do is actually just, you know, say to themselves, honestly, well, hold on, you know, this is bloody obvious. What's going on? You know, from what he's just said on there, you know, go and verify. Well, yeah, actually, this is obvious. Now, if I'm watching a Starsky and Hutch program, I can tell you exactly where this is going, you know. So it's that kind of, I've tried to get that kind of vibe with it. And, you know, again,
that's great. Sorry, the Starsky and Hutch thing just hit me. That's great.
But it's true, isn't it? When you're watching a TV show, people out, or Inspector Poirot or Agatha Christie, people will be guessing. They'll be working out, who is it? Who did it? Who did the crime? Who, you know, or you see the drama unfold and it becomes obvious that, you know, well, the guy's tried to kill his wife, or the guy's having an affair, or whatever it is. You know, you get to know, or people watch EastEnders. They do it with all the soaps as well. And the thing is, you see these things coming, and it's quite obvious because, of course, the script writers write it in that way. And of course, when we've got this other perspective of that, you know, of what's going on, you know, things that we say or questions that we ask, we know they're loaded questions.
Yeah. Right?
But that's the fun of it in a way. And that's the beauty of it, because now you can ask loaded questions, or now you can ask it, because as long as it's getting the viewer to actually think, and then go away and ask those questions as well, but resonate with what's coming forward. And it's all going forward, hopefully, if I've done my job correctly, it's hopefully being taken forward in a way that is, you know, nicely paced, and maybe covers the same concept from two or three different angles, just to reinforce that, you know, for example, you know, one of the main concepts is to, you know, to ask questions and look at everything from more than one perspective, because if you don't, you're not necessarily getting the truth.
Yeah.
Right? So I seek to prove that, and I do prove that, right? It's relatively easily proved. But the point being, it's simple things like that, just a simple concept like that can actually, you know, get someone thinking and actually be of benefit. So I've tried to stack the six DVDs with absolutely loads of these kind of concepts, and just raising issues in different ways and looking at things in different ways to encourage the viewer to do likewise. Because yeah. Who am I to determine what they should think? They need to determine what they think and what they believe. What I want to do is encourage them to start doing it and not be afraid of the subject matter that they question.
Well, of course, one of the earliest forms of conditioning, it seems to me, is the conditioning which suggests to us that we shouldn't be asking questions of authority. It happens from the moment you walk into school.
Well, yeah, absolutely. Yeah, we should just be doing what we're told, shouldn't we? I mean, they know best.
Yeah. So actually just encouraging people to ask questions is, and succeeding in that is actually quite a coup, I would have thought.
Well, it is, because so many people are afraid to ask questions nowadays. And you know, I see it a lot. I see a lot of people really scared to even question, you know, some, and no insult to youngsters, but let me just give an example. Let's say I've got some, you know, 18-year-old council worker who knows nothing about nothing, really, is then telling me what XYZ is, what the law... I mean, funny enough, I had this recently. I can't say too much, but it was a council tax issue that I intervened with to assist on. Council tax, bedroom tax, bedroom tax. But it links directly in with council tax. It's applied on the same basis of the council tax, right? So you've got the definition of dwelling is in there.
Yeah.
So they're utilizing the same legislation. And I managed to get 2014, 2015 bedroom tax waived on the basis that they didn't know what the definition of spare room was.
Right.
But here's the thing. They'd obviously been applying it to everyone else.
Yeah. Yeah.
But they don't know the definition. Now, when I spoke to the council tax, woman about this, the situation was, you know, her attitude was that, you know, I could tell she was a youngster, but her attitude was that, well, it's on my piece of paper. And I said, yeah, right. Okay. But, you know, that piece of paper isn't necessarily everything. You know, you ask them to go, you know, it's the usual kind of scenario. You ask them to go and do some investigating and it's like, no, this is it. I know best. And it's like, really, you know best. And that's just, you know, it's just ridiculous.
Is that what they told you?
Well, you know, I've been planning to make a few phone calls to local government, on the following basis. You know, they're local controlling mind, right?
Yeah.
So I just thought this might be quite humorous to phone them up and say, well, you know, I'm at a loose end today. And, bearing in mind you're the controlling mind, I thought I'd better phone you up and ask you what I should be doing. And incidentally, am I getting paid?
Yeah.
You know, or phone up and, you know, obviously regarding this, the right to be a franchise of the state, the right to be a citizen, right? I can't remember which act I saw that in, but you've got a right to be a franchise of the state. So fantastic. What's the pay deal?
Yeah.
I'll apply now.
Sounds like my kind of franchise.
Yeah. You know, what have you got to do? Spy on your neighbours? Their bins? You know, whatever. I don't know. But, you know, with regards to the council tax thing, just so that people out there know, as a little tip, the valuations office, which is, where the HMRC BOD is actually based, because it's HMRC that generates the list, which then forms the foundation of the council tax, right? And bedroom tax. That list was last compiled in 1993, or last validated in 1993.
Was it? Yeah. I thought they were using census data and stuff like that. They're clearly
they may be using stuff like that, but in terms of them actually going out and verifying everything,
okay,
whatever that means, the last time this took place was 1993, right?
Yeah.
So, you know, it goes on to a list. HMRC basically give a list of all the, in inverted commas, properties or I'm supposing hereditaments that they've got listed around the country, right? On their fictional little map, on their matrix. That then goes on to, I think it's a valuations list, which then has a valuation put on it. And then it goes on to the ratings list or whatever. I can't remember what these lists are called now, but there's three of them. All right. Or there's three stages. Now, the point is that, you know, they fessed up and stated that they hadn't actually done this since 1993. And as I say, when I asked the definition of this room, you know, what spare room mean, apparently this had been causing them so many problems, that what they did was they agreed, because the council can agree to do anything, by the way, just so everyone knows, the council can waive any council tax bill it wants. And HMRC, the valuations office, confirmed this to me.
HMRC seem to be able to waive any bill that they want as well.
They seem to be able to make them up as well.
Yeah.
They were saying the council has the final say-so on this as to whether or not they waive stuff off, right? If you want to then, come up with some kind of, they call it a proposal, which I thought sounded like marriage. If you wanted to come up with a proposal to the valuations office regarding whether or not your property's exempt or it shouldn't be charged or this, that and the other, you can actually, there's a formal process you can go through with the valuations office, right? But I wouldn't necessarily say you should do it in the form of a proposal, because of course that ends up, you know, that is a marriage and that's going to go through their, tribunal's process as to whether they agree or not. What one of the bunnies has done, is sent me a contract that they normally send off to the council. And apparently this bunny receives a zero bill every year. So I may well be putting that out there. I'm going to seek permission to put it out there, but I think I've been given permission to put this out there. So I would perhaps on council tax suggest maybe this contract thing, which I'll hopefully email out to everyone on the email list, together with the sending of the old Polaroid photos of one's property. Don't include the pavement in that photo, just your property, and ask them to, you know, you ask for the name of the man or woman that can verify that that property, see attached one, exhibit 1, 2, or 3, is a property that's liable to be rated for council tax. Because the answer is no. I can tell you the answer right now. The answer is no, right? Yeah. It's not liable to be rated. So sending them, I'm thinking, a combination of the contract, which basically says, hey, look, you know, thanks for the offer of the service, but I want to know, and I want an itemized bill of everything that you're going to be charging me. I want it all itemized because I want to go and shop around and see if I can get the service cheaper elsewhere.
Yeah. Which, of course, you probably can, given that it's all been subcontracted out anyway.
Oh, absolutely. And they're creaming off the top. And as I understand it, 40% is administration charge. So you're paying, you know, you're paying the council to provide a very poor service.
Yeah. Yeah.
And in fact, why are we paying them? I thought that's what, you know, I mean, what's all these other taxes for?
We got a question in the chat box from Mahatma Coat. And it's, I guess it's tied in with your, you know, what's the definition of a spare room? Mahatma's put, the tenancy states how many bedrooms there are. How did you get around that? I guess it's to do with how many people are living there, isn't it?
Well, it's not a case of how many bedrooms there are. Let's put it this way. You know, if I had children and one of them grows up and leaves home, well, I'm sure I can find stuff to put in that room. That's not spare.
No.
Right? So who's to say it's a bedroom? The only thing which defines it as a bedroom is the fact there's a bed in it.
Yeah. Yeah,
and who's giving it that definition? So the point is, I didn't actually have to get around that. What I did was I literally just asked I can't go too deeply into it because I don't want to give the game away as to, you know, where I've intervened and who is it I'm dealing with at the moment, because it's going to be an ongoing thing. But I'm seeking, let's put it this way. The council has the ability, the discretion to do whatever it wants. I merely assisted them in arriving at a decision whereupon, according to their discretion, they waived it.
Yeah.
And yeah. I helped them come to that decision.
Something you happen to be particularly talented at, it seems to me.
Doesn't work every time. But you know, but the thing is, you know, it's practice. You've got to practice. So people out there have got to give it a go. And, you know, I'd recommend to people out there, buy the Dale Carnegie book, How to Win Friends and Influence People. You can get it for 1p on Amazon.
How to Win Friends and Influence People.
Yeah, absolutely.
So is that full of general principles, is it?
Well, look, I was in sales, right? So, or we had to do sales at the bank, and we, you know, a sales training, you know, you're always told, you know, get these books, and I've read positive thinking books and positive mental attitude books for years, right? Because you had to be positive. Let's face it, you know, it's a crap job that we've been doing. You've got to try and make yourself positive and, you know, look at it in a positive way. But the Dale Carnegie thing just gives you, it's little tips as to how to get people to your line of thinking, right? And it's just little human nature tips, you know, to a large extent. But they work. They do work. And, you know, and so by, you know, I try to approach things in lots of different ways, because I try and test out what works and what doesn't. And of course, you can't be guaranteed that something's always going to work because there's a variable, the party you're talking to. You don't know anything about them.
Yeah.
So you have to try and sound these people out and vary your line of approach sometimes, right? You've got to try and sound these people out and try and, you know, tap in the very brief exchanges of, you know, niceties when they're picking up, answering the phone and so on and so forth. You know, even from the smallest little clues that they give you, you've got to try and pick up and sound them out so you can tailor your approach.
Because you don't know whether they've got out of bed and been bitten by the dog or suffered a bereavement or manner of things could have happened quite apart from the basic man or woman you're dealing with.
Yeah, absolutely. And so you've got to try and connect with them. And so, you know, depending on how I'm approaching, because, you know, believe it or not, I intervene in cases in a whole manner of ways, right? You know, the cock and bull stories I come up with to get my involvement in them is like amazing. But yeah, I come up with a whole host of different variations as to, you know, why I or someone else or a different organization or whatever has gotten involved. And, you know, and then I try to approach it in numerous different ways. And sometimes it works and sometimes it doesn't. And in this recent instance, it worked. And it was just helping people come to the conclusion. Well, let's put it this way. They couldn't answer the question. The council that I was talking to, over in the northwest of the country, the county council and stuff that I was liaising with, they, you know, they physically had gone away. They had done some of their research and they couldn't answer the question. You know, we can't explain what it means. And it's like, well, that's fantastic. So on what basis are you charging everyone else?
That's the power of the question, isn't it?
Yeah.
And did you ask one question, or did you ask a load of question, a few questions that cornered them first?
Oh no, I mean it wasn't just one phone call. This took quite a bit of work. It took a couple of phone calls.
It's kind of like chess. It's kind of like chess, isn't it?
Of course it is.
Yeah.
That's exactly what it is. It's chess mixed with poker, mixed, you know, calling bluff, etc. But it's chess, mental chess, expressed in the form of either a conversation or words on paper. And you've then got the timing of when you send stuff. You know, you've got the content, the approach and everything like that, but you've also got a nature, you know, there's a part of it which is calling bluff. And plus, of course, you've got to gain their trust. You've got to come across as credible, depending on how it is you're presenting yourself, right? And what you're presenting yourself as, right? Yeah. So, but it's a game. So let's play, you know, so I play the game. But yeah, on that instance, it won. That was a fairly recent thing. And we had a success with a possession case as well recently where you had to be patient, but the case was dropped.
Yeah. I guess calling the bluff's really important in this game, isn't it? Because it is all bluff.
Well, of course it's all bluff. Yeah, it's all bluff. Yeah, I found that in terms of calling the bluff, you know, obviously you've got to be prepared to do what it is that you say you're going to do.
Yeah.
Right? So when I say calling bluff, you're calling their bluff, really.
That's what I meant, was that on the other side, there is no substance. There is only apparency.
Absolutely. So it's a case of, right, okay, well, then in which case, let's take this higher then. Let's raise the stakes a bit, because it ain't me worrying about the job.
Yeah.
It's you worrying about your job. So, you know, there's a place for that. And I do pull that card and that trick quite a bit. If I feel it's the right thing to do. And if the member of staff's not taking stuff seriously, you know, and I try to pin the tail on the donkey, or on the ass, as it may well be. And so what I do is I then bring it down. I bring it down and make it specific to the member of staff.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, well, I don't care what you're told and blah, or I don't care this, I don't care that. You know, you're the one I'm talking to. You're the one that's got to investigate. You're the one that's got the duty. You're responsible. I'm holding you accountable. Anything goes wrong, if you don't do what you're supposed to do, I'm suing you.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah, indeed. Yeah. Are you trusted to do your job? Well, doesn't that make you a trustee? Do they teach you any law?
Well, yeah. And well, let's put it this way, right? Something I came across the other day when I was doing these DVDs, actually, funnily enough. And it was just, I was just going through some definitions and putting some definitions up on the videos. And, you know, one of which, because I was going through the whole basic concept of, you know, an act, an actor, and so on and so forth. Well, you know, think about it, people out there, think about it. Whether we're talking about government, or whether we're talking about a government agency, or whether we're talking about a company, the company has its policy, the government has its policy. And as part of that policy, or in order to operate that department or whatever it is, they're going to have employees. And those employees are going to be of different degrees. They're going to have different titles, different roles, different responsibilities. But in the script that is the company's policy, and the business plan and the forecast of what they're going to be doing, in that script, the members of staff, the theoretical conceptual members of staff, which are just job roles and responsibilities and what they're going to achieve in terms of actual business and everything else. Well, that's just a concept, right? That's an idea. That's the script. And on paper, everyone always does everything perfect because it's just an idea. That's the script. The problem comes about when the company then has to employ a man or a woman to come in and fulfill the role and act the part. Because now, if that man or woman doesn't know the law, doesn't know the limitations of the different jurisdictions and law forms, doesn't know all the products that they are selling or advising on, or the service that they are providing, doesn't know the company policy inside out, doesn't understand how money, bills, invoices, and all that jazz works, if they don't know all of that, well, then they are a bad actor.
Yeah, because they haven't got the background for the method acting.
They haven't. They don't know. They're not qualified to take the role.
No,
they're in a role they can't cope with, and they are a bad actor. And you know, it's like anything. When I employ, if I pay someone to do a job for me, as I used to say to staff at times, I pay you to do it right. I don't pay you to do it wrong. Because I could pay a chimpanzee, you know, a coconut to do it wrong. At the end of the day, it wouldn't have cost me as much, and it's still wrong.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah.
I pay, so like, you know, likewise when you're dealing with a company or dealing with the government or public servant, you know, I pay you to do the job right. I pay you to know this stuff and I pay you to know it so that I don't have to know it, but you don't know it. And so I've had to teach myself it so that I can pull you up and show you that you don't know it.
Yeah.
So what am I paying you for?
I can see why they add you training, executive senior to yourself.
Well, you know, area managers, it's debt recovery and stuff like that. But it's just being argumentative, you know, as ex-girlfriends will validate. it's all about the arguing. But it's about taking a position. Everything, we've got to remember, this works for us and against us, right? Because everything is polarity, right, in the universe. Therefore, no matter what your adversary is coming up with, and we just happen to know that most of what they come up with is complete baloney or bollocks or confusion, well, then there's always an alternate side to take, right, an alternate argument to take. And that means anything, any excuses these people are coming up with, it's always very, very simple to undermine. You've just got to find the angle. It's all about the angles. And if anyone wants to watch what was it called now? I've forgotten. I've gone blank. Suits. American program about law, right? And it's got some interesting stuff in there. But one of the things that, you know, the main guy in it says, the top head honcho lawyer says, is that it's all about the angles.
Mm.
You've got to find the angles to, you know, to dispel and to argue stuff. But I like to pin the tail on the ass, and I like to pin it on a member of staff if it needs to go that way.
Mm. Well, if nothing else, if you're not getting anything from a member of staff, it's the best way up the chain, isn't it?
Well, absolutely, absolutely. And, you know, I mean, I don't know. I had something I was going to half say. I don't know whether I should say it. But I'll stuff it. I'll say it. right. Okay. I've been thinking about this recently, quite a lot recently, and in particular regarding banks. Now, you know, the issue we've got is to just lead on from what I was just saying. You know, we've got a lot of members of bank staff who have these fantastic corporate statements up on the website, you know, about how helpful they're going to be, how brilliant. I mean, Santander's new one is simple, fair, personal.
Is that what they say, is it?
Well, it's not simple. You can't understand anything about the leaflets. It's certainly not fair. Personal, it probably is personal in that respect. But, the point is they've got a conflict of interest policy, for example, whereupon the customer's interests are put first, yeah?
Yeah.
But that just doesn't happen. So we've got a whole load of staff who don't know what they're doing, right? And when you ask the staff to go do something, you've got a whole load of staff that, especially when your home's on the line, for example, for those people who are dealing with mortgage companies, etc., you've got a whole load of staff who do not care whether you lose your property, your home, whether you're caused stress, whether your family breaks up, whether your partnership breaks up. They don't care, right? Because they're not going away and doing what they're supposed to do, which is to investigate when you reasonably raise an issue. And they're not preventing the handling of the proceeds of crime among colleagues. Because, of course, it's not the bank that's committing the crime. The bank's a piece of paper. It's one or two people acting within that bank or as that bank that are doing the naughty stuff. And it's the 99.99% good guy staff that need to stop the bad two or three people from doing it.
Correct,
right?
Yeah.
Right. So here's the deal. I can't force members of staff over at a bank. None of us lot can force members of staff over at a bank to go and do their jobs properly. However, if a member of staff or if members of staff over at a bank, right, don't do their jobs and they are generally showing the kind of attitude that they don't care whether people do or don't lose their homes, well, then presumably that's because, you know, when push comes to shove, they're looking at their job versus your home and thinking, stuff you, I'm not losing my job.
Slight conflict of interest there, perhaps.
Which is a conflict of interest, but that's probably the, you know, what's going through it. I'm not going to raise this. I'll get in trouble. I'll lose my job. Tough shit. The customer can lose their home, right?
Yeah.
Which is not a very nice attitude. However, I am one of these people that likes to dish out what's coming at me. I am karma incarnate, right? Whether you call it every reaction has an opposite and equal reaction, but I like...
I am karma and I'm going to run over your dogma.
but I like to I find a certain poetic justice in doing to them what they do to me, right? So, for example, okay, now let me just go off at a tangent, and I will bring it back, I promise. We're on planet Earth, and we...
Allegedly.
Allegedly. And we've got the sun, right? And the sun beats down, obviously it's beating out massive amounts of energy in the form of light waves and everything else. And that light is beating down upon the Earth, but the Earth absorbs that energy, right? To a large extent. A lot of it's reflective, but the Earth, we absorb it. We feel the heat. Some places are really hot, hotter than others, but for the most part, we absorb it. Now, what's happening with the banks is that there are lots of people, I say lots, there's a percentage of people, who are prepared and to an extent, able to go on and challenge their banks. And that is being absorbed by the banking system as a whole, right? And it's being absorbed because it is loosely spread. Okay?
Yeah.
So, back to the example with the sun and the Earth. The sun is beating down on the Earth. There are loads of sun rays coming out. There's loads of energy pouring out, but we absorb it. However, take a 2-inch diameter magnifying glass and pick up just a very small percentage of those sun's rays, and you can turn those small percentage of sun rays into a beam which will now set fire to things.
Yeah.
Which will burn through things. It's almost like a laser, right?
Yeah.
Okay, so focusing the point of light, light being truth, focusing that point can actually now do something. It can change the form of something, right? It can have an effect.
It can make it uncomfortably hot.
Very, very, yeah, very so. So, what if, right? What if... I'm just suggesting this. I want people to think about this because we may do this. You know, I may do this. I don't know. Maybe someone else wants to do this, but it's an idea, right? So anyway, what if, let's say, for example, you know, we've got the banking industry. We know that the banking industry, it's working as a cartel or a monopoly, whichever way you want to look at it. And for the most part, the majority of staff are either ignorant, willfully or not willfully, just because maybe they're too stupid. But they don't want to go away and fulfill the job that they've been employed to do. They are bad actors and there's not really much we can do about it. All right. They're displaying the attitude of, I don't really care about your home. I don't really care about you, Mr. Customer. I appreciate that ultimately you pay my salary, but I don't care. My job is worth more to me than you are. Well, great. That's fine. Nice attitude. However, flip side of the coin is that my home or my interests are worth more to me than your job. And if I'm not mistaken, if you lose your job, especially in an industry which is kind of not necessarily as big as it was before and it's not necessarily expanding, and especially with more and more people waking up to the fact that there's a bit of a confidence trick going on, well, then losing one's job in that industry may well lose to one losing one's home. But then again, why should I care? Because you don't care about me, so why should I care about you? So therefore, if it's a choice of you losing your job and maybe you losing your home versus me losing my home, I'm going to go with you losing your job and your home. So we've got a number of banks that are partnered with the government, and they would not necessarily be in a hypothetical situation. If we were to look at this as a hypothetical situation, they would not necessarily be a good target to pick on. But there are quite a few big independents. So let's look at, for example, three main culprits, right? We could look at, say, three main culprits. Or let's say, without naming those, let's say we were to take three culprits, three banks, and say, all right, we're going to give you three banks. We're going to give you notice that we're going to play a game. All right? We're going to play a game. And I want the banks to understand this gamble. You see, I was down the pub the other day with my friend Tom, and my friend bet me 50p that he had an idea that would hurt a bank so much that bank would potentially close and the staff would all lose their jobs. And I bet him 50p that couldn't happen. So based on a 50 pence bet, think trading places, based on a 50p bet, all right, what if, let's say three banks are served notice via the airwaves that whichever of those banks repossesses the most property within the next 30 days, that bank is going to be targeted and boycotted. Right? So it doesn't matter. If you're with other banks, that's fine. If you can, you then divert your attention in whatever way you can to the said target bank. Customers with said target bank are then urged to withdraw their funds. All right, because in a capitalist society where capital is king, what one needs to do is remove the capital to take it away from the bank. Because what we gave to the bank, we can take away. And they need to remember that it is the customer that pays their salaries and makes it all possible. But if they don't, if they want to forget that, then perhaps they need reminding. So what if, for example, after 30 days, the offending company, the company with most repossessions of property, then by its own hand, having ignored notice, is now effectively going to have its business boycotted, right? And I mean sustained boycott, because I don't think it would take that long. This could happen in a month easily.
They're not holding very much reserve, are they?
No. If you look at what happened with Northern Rock, right? What if one morning, random people, right, who are all in on this, are queuing at random branches of said bank around the country at 7 a.m. in the morning. And people are off to work and they're like, what the hell is going on there? Why are all these people queuing up? And they go to ask the people in the queue, and the people in the queue say, well, have you heard that this bank's going down?
Yeah, good night, sucker.
Right? Get your money out ASAP. Because the mere fact that it's announced that that bank is going to be boycotted and people should withdraw their money, well, now there's a good chance that that bank is going to go down because people should withdraw their money. So not only should people then focus on withdrawing their funds from that particular bank, but people that have got loans, alleged loans with that particular bank should, where they feel comfortable, challenge. And those that are not comfortable to challenge but want to challenge should then seek the assistance of those who are with alternate banks and but not the target bank. So people start focusing their attention on the target bank. And those that have got nothing better to do might want to speak to the target bank and actually ask questions or just raise issues or make inquiries. You know, effectively anything that's going to waste their time. You see, they waste our time. They waste a lot of my time.
Yeah.
And so, you know, that's asking them to do the same thing over and over and over again. And my point being, I don't think it would be too difficult to actually make a point to one bank, because then when that bank shuts its doors and effectively there's a run on the bank and all this, you know, most of the staff lose their jobs. Well, you know what my answer would be? I lost the 50p bet, which is my main concern, but the second issue, which I'm not really concerned about, is that the staff lost their jobs.
Mm.
Why should I be concerned? Because that's the attitude you staff have got, isn't it?
Yeah.
So if you have that attitude towards me when you're not supposed to have that attitude towards me, why shouldn't I have that attitude towards you? Because it's just your job and your home. And after all, what should I care?
Yeah. You are really appealing to the living soul there, really, aren't you? Like you say, holding the mirror up to him.
Absolutely. What should I care? And if it takes that, you see, because if this system is really has a spiritual undertone, which it does, because it's the government, you know, government, all these corporations, you can see them. They're effectively churches. They all provide you with a service. I can't tell you what kind of service, but they all give you a service. And you've got to believe in them. You need blind faith. You need blind faith that they're going to sort your problems out. You need blind faith that they're going to be honest with you. And you need blind faith that they're going to do what they say they're going to do. And you need you need to believe in them, because they don't exist. So it's a church, right? So they're like, it's part of the religion. So the point is, you know, we need to be able to turn this around and make them understand that, look, you need us just as much as we would like the proper service and we would like to deal with you. You need us more. And the moment that you stop, the moment that you guys forget that, well, as long as we can be united enough and coordinated enough or get that out sufficiently, and I don't think you'd need to be coordinated necessarily to just get that out and, you know, and create a scenario whereupon people are happy to boycott one particular bank. But the point is, we need to get it across that, you know, you've forgotten who it is that's actually setting you guys up here. You know, you've forgotten this, and perhaps you need to be reminded. And if it means that you guys lose your jobs as a result of it, well, then sorry. Now, the thing is, this is really powerful, right? Not only is it powerful to show that the people out there, the majority of people, can actually jump on board with something and boycott a particular bank. The power comes, or even more power, comes from what follows. You see, once that's happened, the power comes from this question. Who's next?
Yeah. Nick Nomic's just put a thing in the chat box. He's put just a naughty thought. Grab a bunch of mates and start a queue at a bank. then leg it when it opens. But when you think about Facebook and texting and all of flash mobbing and all that kind of stuff, that could be quite a, you know, have a go. I love that.
What would be interesting is to actually put that out there and then to see, because I had an idea that I was going to do this, right? And then I thought, right, okay, so how do we monitor the results? Well, those people that actually have property repossessed in that, you know, you'd have to give 7 days notice to the bank. So we give them 7 days notice that from XYZ date to the end of the month, let's say from the 1st of December to the end of December, we're going to monitor who has property repossessed from you. And those people, once they've actually had property taken away, car, bailiffs, kicked out your home, you then email us, just put in the name of the bank in the top, right? And a brief synopsis of what happened if you want. We count that up at the end of 30 days, and by their own hand, a bank nominates itself. Now, it would be interesting to see whether or not, if served notice 7 to 14 days prior, it would be interesting to note whether or not that bank ceased its repossessions.
It would, especially if you chose December.
Well, I tell you what, that would be nice, wouldn't it? I mean, what a Christmas present for some staff. I mean, I must admit, I'd have a great drink for them if I knew that a company was going down. I would celebrate.
Well, the thing is, though, especially, you know, repossessing stuff in the run-up to Christmas, I'm sure wouldn't go down well. I mean, you know, I'm sure it'd attract a bit more emotional attention than just taking stuff off people every other month of the year.
Oh, absolutely. But what a lovely New Year gift it would be to actually have one of the banks, you know, they know that the first thing that's going to happen in January is that they're going to potentially have a run on the bank, and those staff are going to need to find a new job.
Yeah, it's an interesting idea, isn't it? Look, I think we should probably have a bit of a break, a sort of 5 minute music break. But just before we do that, I just want to find another comment that Mahatma Coat put in here. He put our spare rooms full to the ceiling with our stuff. And
exactly.
And they call it an under occupation charge.
Well, the thing is, you see, it's, you know, occupation, war term.
Yeah.
You know, at the end of the day, what you find, when I was dealing with this case, what you find is that an unqualified member of staff that hasn't read the legislation, doesn't know the limitations of legislation, has made an opinionated judgment stating that they believe that you've got a spare room and that you owe the tax. And yet so just ask them to put their name to it. Say, great, so that was your opinion. When did you become qualified?
Yeah.
As a solicitor or barrister?
I say, are you qualified to make a legal determination?
Yeah, when did you become qualified?
Mm.
I'm interested to know.
Yeah.
Right? Because, and this is the thing, against little things like that, now what you do is you can actually throw that into the negotiation. Now you pull a complaint against a member of staff. Now, why are they let loose on the phone if they don't know what they're talking about? Who's the manager? Who's responsible? Well, we'd better see about your management abilities. Right, put me up the line. Now, all of a sudden, they want to shut you up. Right, okay, how can we get rid of this guy off the phone? Do a deal. Because they've got the discretion to do what they want. I mean, let's face it, they pay themselves huge amounts of expenses and this, that, and the other. They've obviously got a lot of discretion to do what they want.
You certainly have. Almost unlimited, as long as we don't, as long as we don't challenge it, basically.
As long as we don't know about it.
But as soon as you do. Rayo, look, I'm going to put on 5 minutes of music.
No worries.
And then we'll come back, Simon. So I'm going to bung on, Hippie Hippie Shake from the Georgia Satellites.
Nice one.
You're listening live to Dr. Rock's radio show here on peoplesinternetradio.com, where tonight we're seeking solutions with Simon Spaniard, who's joining us live for the show tonight. Are you still with us, Simon?
I am indeed, cigarette in hand.
Very good. Happy and relaxed.
There's not one of them, no. not while I'm live on radio. No way.
Some places even you won't go, eh?
I've done it before and I've learned from my mistakes.
Yes, indeed. It can be a little confusing. So let's just return momentarily, if we could, to the DVD set. Welcome to the Rabbit Hole. Given that what we're trying to do, as you so rightly said, we are in the business of getting information out there that people are not used to hearing. The people, as I said, are queued up on the edge of the rabbit hole. What do you think give us your top three things that you reckon are important for people to understand by whatever means?
Well, I think the first thing, in terms of getting a message across to someone brand new that there's a problem, I always focus on money. Because it's right there in front of your face.
That's where I start too, I must admit, is with the money. And it is the kind of key to the whole thing, isn't it?
Absolutely. Absolutely. And, you know, because the DVDs are, you know, it's our job, without racing off into the distance, it's our job to go back, or certainly for some of us, to go back and gather the rest. You know, you leave no man on the field, right? So you go back and you've got to collect, you've got to bring the other people with you, right? So, you know, one of the basic concepts, two basic concepts. First one is this perspective. The need to look at something, a situation, subject matter, an item, whatever. The need to have more than one perspective of it. And I give the example. For example, I say in the DVDs, okay, here's a question that you probably think you know the answer to. The question is, does the Earth rotate around the sun? Right?
Yeah.
Now, from the perspective that the sun is traveling toward you or away from you, the answer is yes. But from side on elevation, the answer is no, because the sun is traveling through space time on its, you know, orbit, and the Earth and all the other planets are spiraling and spinning on their axes behind the sun as they follow the sun through space time.
That's absolutely brilliant, isn't it? It looks like water running down a plug hole, but on a planet sized scale. I love
it. Absolutely, right? So the point is that given just the one perspective, you know, we all say, well, we know, yeah, I've got it in my encyclopedia. Look, the Earth rotates around the sun, but that's not the whole story. That's only half the story. And so the true answer to that question is, does the Earth rotate around the sun? Well, I suppose you could say, well, it depends which way you're looking at it. But the true answer is, well, no, it doesn't. It follows the sun, rotating and spinning as it goes.
Yeah.
Right. So that's the need to actually have more than one perspective when you're looking at things, because just given one perspective, you're going to come up with something which is effectively an insane answer, right? And that's how we're getting caught out in that game the whole time. The second thing that I just cover very briefly is, you know, re-presentation. So, for example, you know, MPs re-present us. Solicitors, barristers re-present us. And, you know, a representation, if I were to do a representation of an onion, right, aside, you know, jokes aside, do I look anything like an onion? Well, no, right? You know, no.
I'm saying nothing.
Right? You know, so of course the answer is no. So the point being, a representation does not have to look or bear any resemblance to that which it represents.
I think that's a fabulous second choice after money is representation. I think that's great.
Right? So, you know, again, it's emphasizing on the word. So, you know, yes, I put a lot of wordplay in there because, you know, one of the questions I raise in the DVD is, you know, do you think it's possible that you could have been tricked in some way, shape or form with words? And then, of course, I come out with a bit of wordplay, you know, to emphasize the spells and the words and so on and so forth. And so, you know, the whole DVD is, as far as I'm concerned, I've done my utmost, as best as I possibly can, to try and show that there are anomalies and that there are, you know, that it's mystical. I've tried to make it. I really have tried to connect on the mystical Dungeons, Dragons, Da Vinci Codes, you know, come Raiders of the Lost Ark stroke approach to it, because that
Simon Spaniard reaches for the zeitgeist.
Because, well, that's what makes it exciting, right? Because you know, when you're going through reams of paperwork, and let's face it, this is the way I like to look at it. Paper is dead wood, right?
Yeah.
Right, okay. Words are spells and we spell words. And, you know, with those words, we create sentences for the mind because it locks you into a certain thought pattern. So in actual fact, when you're going through reams and reams of paperwork or whatever, you're effectively entering an enchanted wood. Because that's dead wood. A dead wood is an enchanted wood, if you're thinking of The Hobbit.
Yeah.
Right? And so, of course, you're then surrounded by all these spirits and, you know, wanting to take possession of your mind because they want to take, you know, the words on paper has been written with the intention of taking possession of your mind and getting you to think in a certain way.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right? So you are entering an enchanted wood. And so what I wanted to do, especially with the birth certificate thing, you know, which we kind of touch on in the DVDs, but of course with the new series that, you know, I'm launching on YouTube, you know, the whole point of this is to try and get people excited about this treasure hunt. And I know that ultimately part of that treasure hunt is finding yourself. Because that is part of, if anything, that is the most priceless treasure that you can find, is to actually get back in contact with yourself and realize that, you know, you are more than all of this.
And that's one of the main reasons for distracting us, I reckon.
Well, absolutely, to take away our power.
Yeah, yeah, and to take away even the knowledge that's a search available to us, let alone the primary goal.
Absolutely, absolutely. And so with the, you know, the whole point about the birth certificate series, and it may well be a long series of episodes, you know, I mean, we could go into like, you know, four or five, it could be like Dynasty. But the point is...
Dynasty and the birth certificate, get it? Sorry, a bit slow there.
you know, but the situation is that what we need to do is get people to understand and just have, it's that permission to think weird and wonderful things.
Yeah.
Right? It's that permission to be saying these things and to come out with concepts or to thought patterns, which may sound completely crazy to people. It's like, wow, that's really weird. But it's really funny because, you know, I was doing that with, my young apprentice that I've got at the moment. And I think we've decided on the name of Jessica Rabbit for her. So Jessica Rabbit, you know, who I kind of test some of this stuff out on. You know, the whole point is that it still resonates. Even when you go through some of these concepts, like when you're talking about, you know, dad, he's impregnating mum, but it's also intercourse. Intercourse is a word that's commonly used for commercial transactions. So is it a commercial transaction that's taking place? Because surely he's giving something to her. He's gifting something. You know, or is it that he's seeding her? Is he planting his seed? Well, to seed, depending on how you spell it, C-E-D-E is to concede or give away. So maybe it is a gift. It is a giveaway. He's seeding her. You know, so it's all different ways of looking at it like this and playing with the words to encourage people to actually get into that and get their brains working. And the whole point of the DVD, that particular DVD, Welcome to the Rabbit Hole, is to maybe actually send people away with more questions than they get answers. But it's those questions which should hopefully compel them to go and seek the answers.
And teaches them how useful a question is, given that they're trained not to use them.
Absolutely. You know, because we've got to get people asking questions and being, well, I say incentivized to go find the answer. The incentive is that you are going to, ultimately, you can have your freedom of mind, and there's potentially, depending on how it operates, a kind of, in inverted commas, treasure chest to be unlocked at the end, even if that treasure chest is just merely yourself. And it is ultimately yourself, because we want access to our own energy, right? We want to be able to express that within that game without any kind of duty or levy being, you know, put upon us. Yeah, we want to have our full power in that system. But saying that, we couldn't necessarily let that full power go out to Joe Bloggs in the street, because if that happened, you'd see 10 gazillion Ferraris driving around and there'd be no planet left because it would have been consumed. So I'm hoping that by taking people through in a real slow, you know, we're focusing on every single facet of that whole procedure, from man meets woman to man and woman produce baby to baby now gets turned from three-dimensional entity into two-dimensional capital.
Wow. Oh, it's a hell of a story. You'd make a great storyteller.
Well, sending people to sleep.
Yeah, 21st century bard.
Well, I have been barred from a few places.
Well, I must admit, I really can't wait to see the Welcome to the Rabbit Hole DVD. I'm really looking forward to that one. It sounds like great. And the thing is, isn't it, that no matter how familiar you are with the basics and stuff, it's always worth seeing them from another perspective.
I love it, man.
Yeah. Yeah. So, I mean, we're approaching our last half hour because there is now a show after Dr. Rock. No Holds Barred's going to be on. They had a week off last week, but I think they're back this week. So we've got coming into the last half hour, and I'd just like to sort of follow up on some of the stuff that you were doing last time we spoke about your mortgage. Because when we last spoke on this subject, you've got the recap switched on, you were in a position where your mortgage was in dispute and the payments had been suspended, and you were thinking basically that the bank had three choices. It could either maintain the status quo where it wasn't getting any money, it could satisfy you, or worse, maybe it could make their own situation even less enviable by chasing you out of your dwelling. So where have you got to on that? Where are you still in the house?
Okay, right. Well, let me just spell this out. So the whole point of using the Ombudsman service, as I mentioned in the video, which is on the White Rabbit Trust YouTube channel, is that, you know, you've got people that are backs against the wall and that they've got to do something because they're being threatened with, you know, possession, being kicked out, whatever. You've got people that have woken up to this, but they're in a situation where they don't necessarily have to stop payments. They've got the funds coming in. They can afford to pay everything. But out of curiosity, they want to, you know, maybe begin asking some questions and see who it is and what it is that they're really dealing with, right? And I think the avoidance of answering questions tends to let a lot of people know what they're dealing with, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
Because if a bank was honest and open, and if there was nothing to hide, then there's nothing to hide. But obviously the fact that they're hiding it means there's something to hide. So, you know, you've then also got those people that are, you know, willing and able to actually stop paying. They're able to pay, but they want to, you know, they want to actually challenge it. And then of course you've got a whole host of people that are just happy and oblivious to it all and don't necessarily want to know. So the whole point of the Ombudsman, using the Ombudsman, was based on what they'd fed back on other complaints and so on and so forth, the various delays that they had because of their workloads.
Yeah.
You know, poor people. Very busy people dealing with complex issues, you know. So the whole idea of it was that it then buys you time, right? If you use it and time things correctly and split up your complaints into numerous different facets, asking like one question at a time, which the bank doesn't want to answer. then you take that through to, you know, Ombudsman. And whilst that's gone through the first stage of Ombudsman, you've timed your next complaint has gone off to the bank and so on and so forth. So you keep a nice chain of complaints coming through the process so that when one comes to an end, you've already got another one that's sitting there waiting to go. And as soon as the Ombudsman's made their decision and gives you 14 days to accept it or dispute it, you've sent your next one off. So that's starting on the cycle, right?
Yeah.
Now in doing that, you're doing a number of things, right? You're ticking a number of boxes. Number one, if your back's against the wall and legal action hasn't been instigated, well, now you're giving yourself some breathing space, potentially. And you're potentially going to avert any kind of court action because the jurisdiction is with the Ombudsman service to make a decision. The second thing is I'm fairly confident, you know, in some cases I know that banks have contacted people and they've done a deal. Whatever that deal is, they've done a deal, right?
Yeah.
Okay. But there are probably quite a few banks that are now getting wise to this kind of games play. And, you know, they're not necessarily making deals per se. They're just going to play the game. They're going to fob you off. Well, now what you've done, once you're going through 5, 10, 15 complaints, questions, now what you've done is you've now built up an entire history whereupon the bank is avoiding answering questions and, to a large extent, the Ombudsman is going to avoid answering those questions.
Because he's financed by the banks.
Absolutely, right? There's a vested interest there. So the point
at least one vested interest.
So the point I'm at now is this. The mortgage, my situation was that I was protecting the property because, of course, my ex is there and she's not going to be in a situation to rent somewhere because of the cost of rent and the crap salary that she's on and so on and so forth. And so it was a situation of, I don't want her to be dropped in the crap. I'm going to, you know, it's important that I take this on. My gut reaction is I would take this on anyway, but it's even more so because I want to try and sort her out so that I can go about you know, I can go off and do what I want to go do, knowing that I've not dropped her in the shit. I just don't want to drop her in the shit.
So suddenly what you're doing is actually for the benefit of somebody else, which I think probably helps as well.
Well, it is, yeah. So it's for the benefit of someone else. I mean, if it was me, just on my own, I would approach things in a different way than I would necessarily have approached with someone else being involved. But with someone else being involved, it's not necessarily like many situations out there at the moment. You mentioned earlier with couples, you know, the guy's into this, maybe the girl isn't. Well, it's a similar situation in as much as, you know, of course, my ex is fairly, you know, scared of all this stuff. Obviously, hears a lot about it because I talk about it. Understands it, but is scared, right? Scared that, you know, it's going to be aggro and everything else that goes along with it. Scared of the persona, the embarrassment, and so on and so forth. Whereupon, you know, I look at it as a badge of honor to be taking on the banks and to be going into bankruptcy. It's a badge of honor, right? Because you're standing up for something, right? So it's not a detrimental mark anymore. As far as I'm concerned, it is a badge of honor. So where I stand at the moment, okay. The account is just under 30 grand in arrear.
Yeah.
I don't know what the world record is. Perhaps if anyone can beat that, let me know, because, you know, let's see if I can go for the record.
You've had this mortgage for 5 years or so, is it?
This was taken out. The original house purchase was taken 2005.
Yeah.
Remowed in 2007, refixed. And then I ceased payment. After they refused to answer questions, I ceased paying in, I think it was like May 2012 or something.
Fair enough. So it's 30 grand of arrears over the last couple of years or so.
Over the last 3 years, right?
Yeah.
Now the stage it's got to at the moment is that, you know, having put something like 10 or 12 complaints over to the ombudsman, I now have a history of the way in which the ombudsman has dealt with it. And as far as I'm concerned, the ombudsman has discriminated against me because they've not answered one question. Not one question's been answered, right? Sorry, tell a lie. One question was answered, and that was I wanted the terms and conditions from Santander, current terms and conditions. And then once it went to the ombudsman, I got them sent through, right?
Yeah.
That's the only thing that's been answered, right? Every other question has not been answered. Now, I've also got evidence whereupon it states quite clearly in the ombudsman's complaint pro forma leaflet that they will get the answers, that they don't take sides, that they are completely impartial, and so on and so forth. Yet, I now have evidence to show that everything I say is dismissed. I have to provide proof of my backside, inside leg measurement, name, this, that, the other, whereupon the bank is required to give no name of the member of staff giving the info, no proof, but their word is taken.
Do you suppose that's because there's an entity acting and not a living soul?
Well, the point is, I mean, we know that the ombudsman is financed by the banks, right? I mean, there's even a bank director on the board of the ombudsman. So
the ombudsman doesn't really exist. It's only a kind of office with, as you said earlier on, a poor actor in it.
Well, the ombudsman is really a byproduct of blue sky marketing, as I would call it, because it is just the illusionary front end. It's the illusionary, independent arm of the finance industry, which isn't independent and is actually attached to the left hand.
It's basically a bloke standing with a bat, isn't it? It's a bloke standing with a bat and knocking everything that comes towards him as far away as possible.
Absolutely. And I find it really interesting that they keep a record of all the small awards. And although they can award anything, they can award 150 grand damages and they can demand a refund of all installments to an account. And I find it really interesting that they don't keep a record of the big awards. Why is that? Or is it that there are no big awards?
So they can give enough money back to repay the mortgage, because last time
they
spoke.
They can wipe it off.
Yeah. Okay.
Now here's the funny thing. In their leaflets, I'm going to do a video on this. In their leaflets, they say, we can handle complaints regarding credit cards, loans, current accounts, savings accounts, mortgages, this, insurances, and this, that, and the other. And on one of the issues, which was the issue regarding the Law of Property Act 1989, which I sent over with about 13 sub-questions, they refused to answer on the grounds that it was a technical legal question. They couldn't answer it. Well, I'm not being funny, but every single product I just listed is a legal product with legal documentation, legal contracts. So how can they give an opinion on those legal products when they're not legally qualified? And they say that they can actually deal with mortgages, but they then duck out of it when it comes down to a serious question.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right? So the thing is, it's flawed. Their arguments are flawed. And so, you know, one game's plan is to allow them to just spout their crap. Because then when you go back and start and pull them up on it, you see, now the Ombudsman, I've just launched a complaint, and I've actually emailed the Ombudsman to say that I'm now considering litigation against them for discrimination.
Yeah, have at 'em, boy, have at 'em.
Right? Because now it's a case of, well, now I want to know why these members of staff, these staff now have to show that they've not been biased and that they've not discriminated against me, because I've now got consistent history over the last 3 years where every single question is kicked out of touch.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right? Now, I've still got lots more questions to ask. I've got loads of questions to ask. I don't know what...
How many have they not answered? Do you know?
With the sub-questions, I mean, I'm going to guess that it's something like, I would say 30 to 35 key issues they've not answered.
And you're still going strong.
And I'm still asking questions.
I guess as they fail to answer questions that are already put to them, you're not actually establishing any kind of, you're not really managing to cut down the general field of query any, are you? So, but every time they don't answer a question, it must raise a couple more.
Well, absolutely. And, you know, well, as I say, it's raised this complaint now, because now it's raised the complaint that, well, you must be discriminating against me. In fact, I've not issued it as a complaint. I've issued it as a claim. You're discriminating against me. And before I take this to litigation, I want to give you the opportunity of showing me that you haven't.
Yeah. 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 Yeah.
Because my only recourse is to take this to a higher, you know, to a different jurisdiction and to find out the answers, you know, because I don't want to waste time in court, so I'm going to ask you the questions. But if you won't give me the answers to the questions, well, this is the way I'm looking at it. So now I've got no alternative but to give your member of staff a ride at court.
Yeah.
And I don't want to give them a ride. I don't want to give them an emotional ride. But you're giving me an emotional ride, so why shouldn't I give your member of staff an emotional ride?
So,
you see,
yes.
You see, win, lose, or draw, the member of staff still has that emotional ride, because to them, they can win or lose. And that is going to ruin weekends. It's going to ruin their home life. They're going to get butterflies. They're going to feel sick, right? They're not going to want that more than once. After that first time, win, lose, or draw, they're not going to want the ride.
No. And you're, I guess you're making it personal.
This isn't business. This is personal.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, I hate the saying, this is not personal, it's business. I hate that.
Yeah.
Because that is an excuse. It's like, oh, I'm going to screw you over, but don't worry, it's not personal. We'll still be friends, right? But I'm just going to screw you.
Yeah.
And it's like, no, mate. No, sorry, that's not the way it's done. Now this is, well, for want of a better word, this is not business. This is personal, because you have personally attacked me.
One of the things you were considering last time we spoke was, if cooperation was just not being found, was the idea of putting a lien on every member of staff who's touched the Santander investigation. Perhaps the approach you're talking about now is more effective.
Well, what I'm talking about now is, I mean, I don't know what tact, I think there's various lines of approach to use, but you know, I make it clear when I speak to people, I make it clear as follows. I basically say this, look, what you've got over me at the moment, you know, this could be for repossession of a car, you know, whatever. What you've got over me at the moment is that you're threatening, you know, it's blackmail, basically. You're threatening to take something away and send some big burly guys along to take stuff away from me. And I'm asking you, I'm raising various issues, which you're refusing to even go and look at. And if you did investigate them, I know you haven't, because if you had, you'd come up with the same conclusion I have, and the same conclusion of the International Monetary Fund, the Federal Reserve Bank, and the Bank of England. And that is that money is an IOU. So when I deposited that IOU, I deposited money.
Mm.
Right.
Yeah.
So money is debt. Debt is money in this game of Monopoly. And therefore, when I deposited that IOU, that was money.
Yeah.
That's it. That's it. End of story. Now, if you don't want to go and investigate that, that's cool. All right. But there's a couple of ways I can play this. You see, and this is what I generally say, I have an aversion to being bent over a barrel. I have an aversion to that, right? I don't like it. I don't like the feeling of it. I don't like the feeling that I'm getting screwed or lied to and so on and so forth. But I repeat, the only thing that you've got over me is the threat to take away XYZ, right, and cause me, you know, and blackmail me. Now, I've got a couple of lines to follow with that. Number one, if you take XYZ from me, and if I'm successful in bringing a prosecution against you, then your defense is that you loaned me something. And I'm confident you didn't. And I'm confident of it because if you go away and try and find the name of a man or a woman that is prepared under oath or affirmation to stand there and say before the court that they've got first-hand material knowledge of any material monetary loss, I know that's not going to happen. No one's going to come and put their name forward. So before you do what you think you're going to go and do, I would urge you to go get the name of one of your senior managers that is prepared to do that. And if they're not prepared to do that and put their name forward, well, then you need to ask yourself why. The second thing is, why don't I just voluntarily allow you, because of all the threats, because of all the blackmail, why don't I just allow you to take it? But once you've taken it and you no longer have the element of causing me stress and emotional distress or harm and this, that and the other, now what have you got over me? Nothing. But what have I got over you? You see, I'm the kind of guy that spends years taking these things on. And if I've got a bit between my teeth, I'll be carrying on. So you see, the situation is that if you do take what you're threatening to take, which I believe you would be taking wrongly, do you want and are you prepared to have me chasing you until the end of your life or my life, whichever comes first?
Yeah. Yeah.
Because that's exactly what's going to happen. Because if someone came up to your door, pushed you aside and took however much value of your property and you knew it was fake,
yeah,
what would you do?
Yeah.
Would you like it? Would you sit there and say, thank you very much? Would you just leave it and do nothing? Or would you do something about it? Well, there you go. And then I turn around and say, so it's your choice. Your move. What do you want to do? Because I'm easy to meet you either way. Because it's not my job and it ain't my liberty on the line. Because unless you can prove you've made had a material monetary loss, well then, let's go for it. Right? Now the thing is, immediately you remove their angle. You've just got rid of their angle. Because you've now just stated that you're prepared to let that go. I've taken evasive action. I've taken precautions. I'm now prepared for this because I can see that there's no stopping the blackmail. But that's fine because now you're going to then have to stop me and I ain't going to stop until you're put inside or you've lost your job.
Yeah. One of the things you were doing along those lines last time we chatted was you were thinking of posting a video notice you'd made basically to, naming all of the top people involved in all interested parties. So you were, if I remember rightly, you're going for the banks and the brokers and the ombudsman and what was then the Financial Services Authority, now replaced by the laughably named Financial Conduct Authority. Are you going to give them 30 days to answer questions or accuse them of fraud against the British people?
Well, yeah. I sent them, this was all linked into this was the precursor to me trying to compel the official receiver to go and collect the promissory notes, which I found further evidence on is his duty to go do. And, you know, this led to me going in and doing that whole once upon a time in bankruptcy and so on and so forth. But I didn't get anyone rebut that document. No one rebutted it. 34-page statutory declaration using their terminology to prove that the promissory note that is the credit agreement is treated as cash, it is a security, it is negotiable, and so on and so forth. And not one rebutted it, all the top boys.
Is that document in the public domain? Could we have a link to it?
I've sent that out, actually. Most people that have actually gone onto the email list should have had, or probably have had that document. But saying that, I have started doing, you might have seen the Confessions of a Banker series. There's two of them out there at the moment.
Yeah.
There's going to be a lot more because let me just spell it out for people that are querying and challenging. Let's say, for example, unsecured credit, right? Okay. Top tip number one, right? I thought of this the other day. It's fairly obvious. And it's because I was asked by a solicitor on behalf of another case I'm dealing with to verify that the signature on the document, a copy of the document, was or isn't the customer's, right? and they seem anxious to confirm that it is. So I'm guessing that they need him to confirm that it is in order to sue him. Okay, question. If a bank supplies a copy of a document to you, right, is that your signature on that document? Well, my answer is no. My signature was in wet ink on an original document. Now, I don't necessarily have to say that, but in terms of the document I'm having presented to me, well, the answer is no, that's not my signature. Second reason for saying that. When I've been in court before and I've said to a judge, well, what was the consideration the bank put up? The judge said to me, the signature. Okay.
Did he really?
Yeah.
Excellent. Right?
So I've had that a few times. So let's put it like this. We sign a piece of paper, we hand it to the bank. At once, that piece of paper becomes the property of the banks. So who does the signature belong to? The bank.
Yeah.
There's nothing to do with me then, is it? That's not my signature. It's not my signature for two reasons, which I don't need to explain. Number one, the original signature on the original document belongs to the bank. That's not my signature now. That's the bank's. If the bank wants to claim it and say that that is the consideration it put up, well, then that signature is the bank's. That's not my signature. And certainly when they send out a copy of a document, well, the copy signature is not my signature. Because that's a copy of my signature. That's not my signature. Likewise, a photograph of me is not me. It's a photograph of me. It's the tautology, right? Playing with words.
Yeah.
Right. So if that's not my signature, well, now the bank has to investigate a fraud, right? Now they're going to be thinking someone came in and posed as you and obtained the funds. Right. What funds?
Yeah. Yeah.
Right. That's a potential games play for people to think about. Now, where else was I going to go with this? What was the question you asked me before?
The question was how the video notice went.
Oh, right. Okay. Yes. So I haven't actually done that video notice. But what I can say to people out there challenging loans and credit cards, you've just reminded me now, is this. As a banker, did I ever see computer issues whereupon a computer glitch created an account which had never existed? Yep. That's happened. It's happened at every company I've ever worked for. A computer glitch has created an account in someone's name, made it live, and put a figure there that's not real. Not even in their world, it's not real. It's a glitch, right?
Yeah.
So, is it possible that anyone chasing you up for an account, that account could be fictitious? The answer is yes. Number two, have I ever known members of staff to create fictitious loans in order to run away with the money? Yes. Okay. There's one up. Well, there's something which alludes to that up there at the moment, but there's going to be more coming. So I know for a fact that managers and staff, well, junior member of staff in one particular bank where I worked used the manager's code to open up dormant current accounts, which had overdraft facilities. She withdrew the money, taking it into overdraft, closed the accounts back up as dormant, flagged them not to get post, and she ran off with 70 grand.
Nice work if you can get it.
She got caught. The manager got sacked. It did not get reported to the police because the bank did not want to report it to the police.
Mm.
There was another manager who was caught at the airport trying to leave the country. Auditors turned up. He leaves the branch at lunchtime, doesn't come back. That's the, as I explained on Confessions of a Banker number two, that's a clear sign something's gone wrong. A whole load of loan files were found in the toilet systems in plastic bags. He'd basically taken names and addresses either from customers that had applied and not gone ahead with the loan, or he went through the phone book and basically just created a whole load of fictitious details, wrote a load of loan business, kept the checks, banked them himself, made payments, and so basically had a snowball effect. He was skimming money in order to buy property, which he was then going to effectively sell and run off with the money. Right. So the point is, is it possible that you applied for a loan way back when, didn't go ahead with it, but that a member of staff has taken your details and created a fake account? Is that possible? Yes, it is. Now, according to the Daily Mail, jihadists are now hacking into companies in order to cause mayhem on the computer systems. So is it possible that a terrorist cell has hacked the bank and created an account in your name just to cause problems? Yes, it is, according to the Daily Mail. You can Google it. Right? So there are a whole host of reasons as to why an account might be showing in your name. Right?
Yeah.
But also, when they send out any any, you know, there's a copy of your credit agreement. Just write back and, you know, you could write back. Think about the way this could play out. So you have to play mental chess in your head. How could this play out? Think of all the potential avenues it could play out and make sure you're prepared to take the risk, but, or prepared to deal with what comes. But I would have no hesitation in saying when that copy of the credit agreement comes out, well, what's this? That's not my signature.
Yeah.
Now, does the bank have the manpower to investigate every potential fraud which they think has taken place in that way? No.
There's no reason why they should care, is there? Because
depending on the balance.
Well, yeah, no, I meant generally speaking. Yeah. So, yeah.
Depending on the balance, though, they won't care. If it's small balances, they probably won't care because the manpower needed to tie down that investigation is going to be ridiculous.
Yeah.
Now, if loads of people were doing that, do the police have the manpower? Well, no, because they're too busy issuing fines and collecting revenue for their corporate employer. That's why they don't investigate rapes. That's why they don't investigate true crime, because they're too busy issuing parking tickets and issuing fines. Or watching, as I've heard from some, you know, reliable sources, watching traffic cones to make sure they don't get stolen. Believe it or not, that is one of the duties of our modern police officer, watching traffic bollards.
Well, somebody's got to do it.
I know, it's very, very, very important. Look, job.
Well, we're kind of reaching the last couple of minutes. We have reached the last couple of minutes of our talky bit, Simon. It's been really great having you on the show. I think people have enjoyed it, but there's one or two outstanding questions.
Yeah, fire away.
Lee said, Lee wants to know whether Simon can put a fruit pastel in his mouth and not chew.
No, I love fruit pastels and I do chew them.
And, Captain Stingray would like to know if you know why there's only ever two black ones in a pack.
I like those ones. They're my favorite. So, I do have a sweet tooth and I do like sweets. So, what can I say?
That's really brilliant. Well, Tar, very much for joining us. I think there's sort of one or two other things I wanted to cover, so perhaps you consider coming on again at some point.
Absolutely, no problem.
Absolutely brilliant. Well, look, I'll put on a tune for the people and have a quick chat with you offline. So that was Tracy Curtis and Don't Sit Silently, and you're listening to Dr. Rock's radio show here on peoplesinternetradio.com, and we've been talking live with Simon Spaniard. If you want to find him, he's on White Rabbit Education on YouTube, where he has somewhere over 100 videos, and including Confessions of a Banker and Challenge Your Mortgage, a 7-parter, which kind of crystallizes the kind of stuff he's been doing there. And he asked me to let you know that he can be contacted at whiterabbiteducation@gmail.com if anybody's interested in seeing more about the DVDs. And he says that you can take his word for it that if it's a blockbuster, then you're going to get to see a lot of butts being kicked.